Okay, now the next section, if you look on your outline, is that we're going to start talking about the five faults or the five interruptions to developing calm abiding and the eight antidotes to those. Okay, so I know there's five interruptions and eight antidotes. They're not the same number, you know. Somebody said symmetry is stupid. Don't expect it all fits together. And that's because the first interference has four antidotes to it, and the other ones all have one. Okay. So let me just kind of list them, and then we'll go through and explain them more in depth. So the first fault or the first interruption we have is our old friend laziness. Okay. And then laziness has four antidotes. And so first we develop faith or confidence to oppose it, then aspiration, then joyous effort, and then finally pliancy or flexibility. And I'll go back and explain all these. Okay, we're just having an overview now. Then once we've gotten over laziness and we're able to kind of get ourselves on the cushion, the next thing that happens is that we forget the object of meditation. Our mind gets distracted. Okay, it goes to cream cheese or chocolate, whatever you happen to prefer. And here, what we need to invoke as the antidote is mindfulness. And I must say here that all these words in the context of calm abiding have very, very specific meanings. So we throw mindfulness, you know, we throw that word around like left, right, and center. You can't even find it in Webster's, but we really use it a lot. But here in the context of the calm abiding meditation has a very specific meaning. Okay, and so to all these different terms. And so that's why it's real helpful to hear the teaching so you can identify these mental factors very clearly in your own mind. Over forgetting the object, the next thing that happens is that the concentration gets interrupted either by laxity or excitement. So these are actually two different hindrances, but they're categorized under one here. Okay, remember, symmetry is stupid, so two can be one. And the antidote to those is the mental factor of introspective alertness. Sometimes this is just translated as alertness, sometimes as introspection, sometimes as vigilance. There's many different translations for this particular word. Then the next hindrance is after we begin to deal with our laxity and our excitement is that we don't apply the antidotes. Okay? With the introspective alertness, we've begun to notice the lethargy, you know, the laxity and the excitement, but we don't apply the antidotes. So this next hindrance is non-application, and the antidote to that is application. Okay? And then the next thing that happens is that we apply, but we over-apply. And so that over-application becomes a hindrance. And then the antidote to that is equanimity, letting the mind be. Okay, so I'll go back through and explain these. Okay, so the first one, laziness. Now, we went over this one a lot when we talked about the far-reaching attitude of joyous effort, so I won't go into it in too much detail here. But do you remember the three kinds of laziness? Okay, one is sloth, you know, wanting sleep. Yeah, distraction and busyness. And depression or discouragement. Okay, good. Okay, so these are three kinds of laziness that really interrupt our meditation. And, you know, they're what prevent us from getting ourselves on the meditation cushion to start with. You know, I mean, they prevent us from going to teachings on meditation, from getting on the cushion, from staying on the cushion, everything else. Either because, you know, we just like to sleep and block everything out and procrastinate, or because we keep ourselves incredibly busy running around doing all sorts of things, or we keep our mind totally preoccupied with putting ourselves down and telling ourselves how lousy we are and getting thoroughly discouraged. Okay, so that keeps us from doing anything also. So the real antidote, the real cure to laziness is this mental factor of pliancy or flexibility, which is a mental factor that allows both our body and our mind to be incredibly flexible and relaxed and tuned in. But because we don't have so much flexibility and pliancy right now, although that's the real antidote, we start with something that's going to help us develop the flexibility. So we start first by developing faith or confidence. Then we move on to aspiration. Then we move on to joyous effort. And then all that results in having the flexibility or pliancy. Okay? So to come back to the first antidote here is gaining faith or confidence. And so this is the mind that is able to, first of all, have faith or confidence that such a thing as calm abiding exists. Now already for us, you know, this can be a big issue, because if we doubt the existence of calm abiding, then for sure we're not going to get on our meditation cushion and try and develop it. And we Westerners have lots of ifs, ands, and buts. Yeah, we hear about single point and concentration, we go, well, yeah, but, you know, I want to see statistically with somebody's EEG, you know, that it's actually, you know, that there's some change here, or, you know. And actually, this is quite interesting, if I can just make a little divergence here. Because His Holiness has really given his approval to a group of scientists who are involved in doing research like this. And so they're trying to test some of the yogis to, you know, test, you know, GSR and attention response and all sorts of other things to see what happens in scientific terms that are measurable when somebody develops concentration. Okay? And so I think His Holiness has consented to this research because, you know, if they can prove something, then for Westerners, it gives us, oh, yeah, look, there's all these statistics, calm abiding must exist. Whereas, you know, we just hear stories of people who have it and we kind of scratch our head and say, well, I wonder. So as Genlam Rinpa said, you know, and it was so cute in the book the way he said it, that we hear stories about this, and we can choose to believe the stories and practice or not believe the stories and then we don't practice. It's completely up to us. Yeah? But he was saying if you happen, you know, to believe the stories of people who have gained calm abiding, then it's going to inspire your own mind to practice because you have that conviction that calm abiding exists. And then based on that conviction that it exists, you can begin to notice its good qualities, and you can begin to see the disadvantages of not having it. Okay. Now, I think a little bit already in our own experience, we can see the disadvantages of not having calm abiding. Okay, because we sit down to meditate on anything, and our mind drives us completely buggy. Yeah? If you don't have any feeling for the disadvantages of calm abiding, do a week's retreat. Yeah, and sit there with your mind for a week and see what goes on within your mind and how the mind just takes you all over, you know, and creates these incredible fantasies and makes you so upset and so depressed and so ecstatic, and none of it's real because you're sitting there in one room on a cushion. Yeah, which your mind makes everything very real and very solid and completely, you know, it's too much. So we can already begin to see the disadvantages of not having calm abiding by looking at our own experience. So then we start to think, well, what would be the advantage of calm abiding? Well, number one, I could sit down and have some peace of mind. I could actually control my mind, you know. And if I don't want to think about chocolate, I'm not going to think about chocolate. And if I don't want to think about what somebody did to me 15 and a half years ago and get depressed upon about it again for the umpteenth time, then I'm not going to think about it. Yeah, and so some ability really to control the mind. I mean, this is one of the profound advantages of calm abiding. Okay, and so in that way, it's another advantage is, you know, because we can control our mind, so it helps us to eliminate these gross levels of the disturbing attitudes. It helps us make all of our other meditation practices much more forceful. Because when we meditate on loving kindness or we meditate on bodhicitta or anything else, if we can do it with calm abiding, then that meditation is going to sink in and go in our heart. So it makes all the other meditations more forceful. Calm abiding can also be very blissful. And so people who are looking out for bliss, this is a good advertisement. It can also help us develop psychic powers, which can be then used to help other people. It can help you do the tantric meditations, where you have a lot of visualization and different things to do, and also on the subtle nervous system. So it's very helpful to have calm abiding and the ability to concentrate. By helping all of our other practices become stronger, for example, when we do purification or collect positive potential, if we do these with calm abiding, then those practices become stronger, so then it helps us free our mind from the negative karma, create positive karma, and so it really aids us in getting a good rebirth. And it helps us, you know, being born in a place, in a time where we're able again to meet the Buddha's teachings and do the practice. By tying our mind to an internal object, it also ceases a lot of the external harms. Because when we develop calm abiding, we're really concentrating on the mind on something important. So all these other things that usually preoccupy us as being harmful, they fade away and they no longer appear to our minds as harmful or as enemies. So it really helps calm the life down a bit. It makes the mind very clear and very powerful, so then whatever meditation we do, we can have an experience of it. You know? So instead of just kind of, like we go through the other meditations and sometimes it just feels like, you know, we're just going through it and we're not getting anywhere and the mind's not very powerful or clear on it. Well, if we have calm abiding, then we do the meditation on loving kindness or the taking and giving or whatever. And the mind is so powerful that, you know, you generate a real strong experience in your meditation because of that. So it really helps gain the realizations. And then, of course, as we have the realizations of the path, then we progress along the bodhisattva stages and we become closer to liberation and enlightenment. And so in this way, if we can really think about all the advantages of calm abiding, you know, how it helps us this life, but more important, how it helps us in our practice, and how it helps us have good future rebirth and attain liberation and enlightenment and be of service to others and, you know, pacify and smooth out our own mind and work out a lot of our junk, then the more we see this as an advantage of calm abiding, then the more faith we have, you know, because we see the qualities. And so that leads us from this first antidote to the second one, which is aspiration. Okay? So it's like when you see the qualities of something advertised on TV, the next thing that happens is that you have aspiration to get it. And then the thing that happens after that is that you have the energy and the effort to go get it. Okay, so it's a similar kind of process that's working out here. You know, first to develop faith, we really spend some time thinking about the advantages of calm abiding, the disadvantages of not having it. And then from that, we develop the mind of aspiration, which is the mind that really takes interest and yearns for this and wants this for it. Okay? And so that mind of interest and aspiration, then that leads us to put effort in the practice. Okay? And so effort becomes the third antidote, because effort is, you know, the mind that takes delight in doing what is virtuous. So then we really have interest and delight and propensity and eagerness regarding the practice. And then that automatically, as we practice therefore more and more, then we develop the flexibility of body and mind, and then that actually, you know, completely eliminates the laziness. Okay? So it's kind of this progression that we go through in doing this. Now, it's a progression, but don't think that you have to, you know, fully master faith before you get any aspiration, before you get any effort, before you get any clients. Because it can happen that sometimes either as beginning, you know, as baby meditators, we get kind of some experience of pliancy. It lasts for maybe, you know, 10 seconds or something, or just something. We get something. And then that, just from our own experience, makes us go, oh, hey, wow, well, this is something that feels good, and this is, you know, kind of similar to what they might be talking about in the books. And so that, then, that initial experience or flash then comes back and helps increase our faith and confidence, and therefore our aspiration, and therefore our energy, or our joyous effort in doing the practice. Okay? So do you see how these four are connected? You know, although there is a progression, it's not that, you know, they're real solid steps, because you can go back and forth, and one can really affect the other. Yeah, so it's not that, you know, once you get aspiration, you stop having faith. Yeah, and once you get energy, you stop having aspiration. It's not like that, okay? But it's really kind of seeing how they affect each other, and they build on each other, and they, you know, they really help us go someplace. And so the whole purpose of talking about all these things is because all of these are aspects of our own mind. Now, all the interferences are aspects of our own mind. All these antidotes are aspects of our own mind that we have already right now. The only problem is that our faith is, you know, this big, and our aspiration is a little smaller, and our energy is like that, and our pliancy is like that. You know, they're all still small, but we still have these qualities right now in our mind. So it's not like we're having to go and get qualities somewhere else that we don't have anywhere at all. It's just taking what is there and really increasing it. And in the same way, you know, all the interferences are mental factors too, and we're trying to use the positive mental factors to, you know, smooth out and subdue the interfering ones. Okay? So this is all talking really on a very, very psychological level, and the whole purpose of doing this is so that when we sit down and meditate, we can begin to identify these different mental factors in our own meditation. Okay? What does laziness feel like? What is my mind like when I'm lazy? And so to be able to recognize laziness when it's happening, what does faith feel like? What does aspiration feel like? How can I cultivate those? Because sitting and praying, Buddha, 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 please, you know, give me these four antidotes, won't do it. We have to kind of be able to recognize them in our own mind. And then, you know, here it says exactly how to develop them. Okay? If you want pliancy, develop effort. If you want effort, develop aspiration. If you want aspiration, develop faith. If you want faith, think of the positive qualities of calm abiding and the negative qualities of not having it. Yeah? And so if we do that, then kind of it leads us to have these all, to develop all these other mental factors that then really change our mind. Uh-huh. Because pliancy is this flexibility of body and mind that enables, the mind is just like flexible and relaxed, so you put it on an object of meditation and it stays there. And the body, the winds in the body have been purified, so your body doesn't start aching and complaining and groaning when you're meditating. Yeah, and your mind doesn't get bored and distracted and, you know, tired of the whole thing. So it's this flexibility of pliancy, you know, that everything becomes workable or serviceable? Is that a word? Serviceable? Yeah. So, yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah? Yeah? Because laziness is just stuck. Yeah? The mind is totally inflexible when it's lazy. Because it's totally stuck. And so, you're right, it's total opposite of this flexibility, you know, in which the mind is very serviceable. You had something? Uh-huh. And it also helps us not just get the psychic powers, which are called the common attainment, but the real important thing is that it helps us get the uncommon attainment of liberation or enlightenment, which is what we're really after. Okay? So let's sit and meditate for a few minutes now, and let's try and do this one of focusing on the image of the Buddha. Okay?